ladies and gentlemen, Damas y Caballeros.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, as always, from New York City, Emil Carr. What's going on, brother?
I'm good, fam. How are you doing out there in the West Coast?
It's starting to get really it's starting to get really warm over here, man, to tell you the truth. Was trying to work outside and Jesus, got the sun rays just beaming on my back. And so it's going to be that time. Start pulling out the umbrella, you know, and putting on some sunblock, you know, protect myself from the sun rays. That's about it. How's the weather over there, first off, bro? Because I remember you saying that the weather was cold and stuff.
Yeah, it warmed up today. I was actually out on my way home just before the show, and it was quite nice outside. You know, the sun's setting here later on in the evening, so it's nice evenings, man.
Absolutely.
And as Saturday was a nice evening of boxing, and I know we got a lot to do as it relates to talking about that.
Exactly, you know. Well, and as always, we got a lot of stuff here to unhand wrap on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget to jab the like button and uppercut that notification bell. Don't leave it to the judges to let you know when we're on live here on Leaving the Ring. Follow our Twitter accounts, Leaving the Ring Boxing, Maestro Emil Carr on Twitter as well. And if you guys want to call in, certainly can. 718-618-4284 here on Leave It in the Ring. But let's get down to it. Here's the tight schedule that we got going. Trilla says that they made $1.3 million. We got the Showtime boxing schedule. Then we got to talk about Tony Harris's performance with that draw that he received. And Demetrius Andre, you know, some say he looked stellar. Some say he didn't. Some say they don't care to see him ever again. Others say, hey, we got to see him get in there and hopefully get a shot at either Charlo or Triple G. But let's start off with that Trilla there, Emil Carr. What was your reaction? What are your thoughts about that card?
Okay, so I'll just walk you through my experience with the card. I was actually watching the DAZN card in the afternoon, as I think a lot of us were. And then in the evening, I turned on Fox because it was live on Fox. Here it's Fox 5 here in New York City. And, you know, it was free boxing, literally. And the card was pretty good. And while that card was going on, when there were breaks, I was like checking out Triller just to see what was going on because I knew the main event was going to start late. The first time I tuned in, a fat guy was slapping another fat guy in front of Ric Flair. And then I went back to the Tony Harrison card. The second time I tuned in, there was like a bunch of strippers doing like a stripping show. And then I tuned off and I went back to the Harrison card. And then the third time I tuned in, I saw an old Frank Mir fighting, well, actually I should say hugging an old USS, what did De La Hoya call him actually? USSR? So yeah, it was, that was my experience with it. And I ended up just watching the entire, a fight between Steve Cunningham and Frank Mir and listening to a drunk Unc De La Hoya, T.O. Oscar, as I was calling him Saturday.
Right.
Just being a drunk uncle live on TV. It was sad, but also very hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, you know, look. If you're a boxing fan, a hardcore boxing fan, and you bought it, you know what you bought. I don't see why there's so much hate about the Trilla thing. When Leaving the Ring gets it in their Gmail for the press, and Al Bernstein is actually pumping this up, and it says Ice Cube and all these other names, you know, the Too Short is going to be there and they're going to perform and all that. I already knew what we were going to get. My kids are the one that they were having a fight party. They're, you know, they told me on Saturday, hey, we want to have a fight party. And I was like, go right ahead. They bought the fight. So I was like, well, I'm going to be watching the Tony Harrison fight. While they're doing that. And if, you know, if it doesn't counterpart each other and there's still time, I'll go jump over and watch it. The remainder of that card of Trilla with the boys. Right. Well, by the time Tony Harrison was done, I went over there and I saw the same thing you were seeing. And I just noticed that everybody that was there in the game room with my kids, it's all their buddies. Nobody was paying attention to it and nobody cared about it. They even took off to go eat pizza, I'm sorry, because there was nothing happening. They saw that they had time to kill because of the concert that there was, you know, having there. I just thought it was hilarious to hear, you know, Snoop Dogg say that he's bringing something to boxing that's needed. I was still waiting for what was needed for boxing, and to me, was never delivered. What about you?
Well, I mean, the one serious fight on the card was supposed to be Red Cats versus Progre.
Ooh.
And that might be the most embarrassing fight on the entire card of the fights that I saw. I mean, first of all, I've never seen a wife get that close to the ring in a boxing match. She was there yelling at the referee. At that point, I thought it was actually a low blow, but then we saw multiple camera angles, and it was clear that this dude did not get hit below the belt. He barely got touched. He got like a slap on the side of the body with like this part of the glove. And he went down as if he just got nailed with a baseball bat to the cojones, man. I've never seen anything like that.
He literally went out on the stretcher. That's the crazy part. I never seen anybody leave on a stretcher after, if it was a low blow, you know, and like you said, it was the palm of, well, not even the wrist that connected on the side of maybe the top of his hip bone. I don't know. But as you saw, you know, Regis Progress was in every right to say, listen, I want a TKO on my record. I don't want, no contest. I don't want any of that. Give me the TKO, and rightfully so, the commission and just everybody that was involved in that fiasco gave him that TKO. So that was a good thing that came out of it. Now, I got a lot of calls, and everybody was like, dude, what did you think about this? This seemed like it was just a total shit show. I was reading your tweets. It was hilarious. And I was just like, you know, here's the thing. This is my question to you, Mokar. If you're not an avid boxing fan, but you tune in to watch the YouTuber and the MMA guy, which I don't know much about either one of them, and you tuned in, like my kids, they tuned in with their buddies to watch this fight, okay? And everything was drawn out. They didn't really get anything out of that entertainment value except for music. Stuff that they could do on their own. Surprisingly, the kids were, a lot of people that I talked to today were saying, I bought the fight to watch a fight, and I didn't get that. That wasn't delivered. So my question is, and I've asked this to everybody that I've talked to who came across this fight, I've asked them, did it intrigue you to now move on to buy the next Trilla event, which would hold the unified lightweight champion, Teofimo Lopez?
Well, yeah, first off, salute to everybody in the chat. Thank you for joining us today live on the Leave It in the Ring network channel. As to your question, David, I am not interested that much in the next. Well, actually, I guess I have to be because Teofimo's fighting Kambosos, and that I hope we can talk later on about that press conference, because I just thought that the dude came across as a total cornball. But we'll hopefully get to that later. Look, people don't tune in to the Super Bowl, at least I don't think they do, to watch the halftime show. People tune in because they want to watch football. I think people tune in to these cards because they want to watch a fight. Now, maybe it's a fight featuring Jake Paul more than it's a fight featuring Regis Progre, but I think they tune in to watch a fight. I don't know how much benefit Doja Cat and these, and I mean, I missed a lot of these performances because I was switching back and forth. But Justin Bieber was there too. I don't know how many people are tuning in for that. You know, I'm also wondering, maybe that's like a promotional tool for these artists. Maybe they're not really getting paid that much to be there. It's like advertising for them and to let people remind them that maybe they have a single out or an album's coming out, you know, almost like a promotional tour, so to speak, right? Because I just don't see the benefit right now in those guys performing. It feels like filler material to me. It wasn't really that entertaining. And I'm a huge fan of E-40. Like, I actually tweeted out about E-40 over the weekend. Like, I think his last two singles have been really good. But I don't tune into boxing to watch E-40.
Right.
I tune into boxing to watch boxing. So, and I think you said it yourself. Your kids tuned in to watch the fights, right?
Right.
They didn't tune in for the other bells and whistles. So, shout out D-Style. Thank you for joining us. A-Rod, Nando, Mario Figueroa, Tony Yeo, LT, Andre, Puerto Rican Rum, Pablo, Renteria, and everyone else in the chat. Thank you all for being here live on Leave It in the Ring. I know I'm forgetting a lot of people, but thank you so much.
Yeah. You know, A-Rod in the chat room says, I'm buying the Teofimo fight bout, but not because of the past weekend. Now, I don't say, that's why I said, if you're not a boxing fan, A-Rod, I said, if you didn't watch the sport, and you just tuned in to watch what happened this past Saturday on Trilla, which I know a lot of non-boxing fans, especially at work, you know, that they don't watch boxing, but they did tune in and bought into this event, and they moved forward to, you know, excuse me, they dished out their hard work to watch this fight here, you know. And then even too, the talks was how hammered everybody was on the panel. It was really disorganized. It was just really bad overall. And I described it like I was telling Amilcar before we came on air. What it really, really reminded me of, to tell you the truth, was a bunch of nerds that very, very first time got noticed at a party. That's the feeling that I got. They didn't know how to act. They didn't know how to behave. You know, Al Bernstein was there trying to be composed, trying to, you know, do his job, be a professional. I don't know if you're a big Howard Stern, but do you remember the movie Private Parts there, Amilcar? I don't know if you ever watched that movie.
I saw it when it came out when I was like in middle school a really long time ago, but I definitely remember it coming out. Yeah. I don't think I watched it though. No, I didn't. No.
You know, well, there's a scene in Private Parts, that Howard Stern movie, where Howard was trying to, because the network fired Robin. He was trying to get her back, and they put this square with them. And what Howard did was, the guy was a weather guy, right? And what he did, he was holding an interview where this girl came in and she, you know, put like a 14-inch Camasio down her throat. And the guy freaked out, didn't know what to do. That reminded me with Al Bernstein on Saturday night. He had a bunch of guys smoking out, drinking, and everybody was just kind of, you know, free range, doing whatever they wanted. And Al Bernstein was in the middle trying to conduct a real commentary to some fights there. But instead, it was just like, it was all over the place.
Well, Nando in the chat, who is obviously a member of the Leaving in the Ring family, says that he tuned in for E. Fonzarelli. So E-40, E-Feezy. So I'm a huge E-Feezy fan, too. In fact, like I said earlier, I think the Mob single is really good. I think the I Stand on That single with T.I. is really good. But when I want to listen to E-40, I listen to E-40. When I want to watch E-40, I'll watch E-40. I think most people tune in for the boxing. And if we're going to rate it on the product of boxing, I think it was a very poor product. We had Frank Mir against Steve Cunningham. Not a very good fight. I think the most entertaining thing about that fight was a clearly inebriated, possibly Oscar. coked up Oscar, calling him USSR and, you know, screaming. And I think Mario Lopez was pretty embarrassed. He was like providing interpretation for his drunk rant. That was probably the most entertaining part of that fight. The red catch fight, especially the knockout with Progre. Actually, it wasn't known if it was a knockout. Whatever it was classified as, was a total joke.
Right, the TKO. And
you had Ben Askren, who, I mean, this guy was a former world champion in MMA in two promotions, I believe. He was an Olympic wrestler. I mean, he came in looking like Homer Simpson did when Homer Simpson started boxing on The Simpsons, all flabby. And he just got sparked by, again, a guy with no amateur fights and yet to take on a professional boxer. And that was the main event. So, I mean, look, boxing product, poor. If you're looking at it, a concert product, again, I don't think people tune into the Super Bowl to watch the halftime show.
But was it really a boxing product, though? I mean, I see the value of the entertainment. And also, I mean, look, I guess I got to be a devil's advocate here. You know, you have a prospect that is fighting, which other prospects have done, is guys that have zero on their record or guys that have 21 losses and never a win and they're facing a hot prospect. I'm looking at that kid, Jake Paul. That's what they're doing with him. I agree with you. He's headlining, you know, and I think that's where the line's got to be drawn, is that if you're headlining, then you should be facing bigger fights. But if he's a demand, which I think he is, though, Amilcar, he is a demand now to these, you know, teeny boppers that watch the YouTubers. I mean, hey, that's my kids come from that generation. They were like excited to watch this fight. They were like, oh, I hope he gets his ass kicked. And I was just like, really? I mean, but they were excited the last time when he was on DAZN. So I don't think it hurts boxing, but I certainly don't think it helps boxing. But if Trilla was really looking to be taken serious as a major player in the sport of boxing and was trying to help get more eyes to want to buy into the Teofimo Lopez sweepstakes in their next event, I think they missed the bar there.
Well, yeah. The next promotion is going to be rather interesting. I'll get into that in a second. I was laughing because Puerto Rican rum said Oscar De La Hoya had enough perico in him to kill an elephant. And Tony Yeo says that Mario Lopez, Eric Gomez, and the rest of Ring TV staff should be so embarrassed to let Oscar go up. And I agree. Like, it was not a good look for Oscar. Is this guy really a businessman, a promoter? Is this who Virgil Ortiz is entrusting with his career? Is this who Ryan Garcia is entrusting with his career? Really? A guy who's getting drunk and high on live television and essentially promoting himself. You know, one of my biggest issues with Floyd being a promoter is that it's difficult to be a promoter when you're promoting yourself. Eddie Hearn ain't out there providing live commentary to fights. Eddie Hearn isn't talking about going into the ring to fight people. Eddie Hearn, whether you like him or not, is focused on the job of being a promoter for his fighters, which is why I consider him the best promoter in the game. Now, as it relates to the next card with Teofimo Lopez and George Kambosos Jr., let's start with the press conference. That was not a good look for Teo. To me, Teo came off as kind of a cornball. I mean, you're the undisputed lightweight champ of the world, dog. Mm-hmm. And you're taking off your shirt because some mandatory challenger is saying that you look a little bit heavy? Really? I mean, it just came off as super corny, the entire thing. And then Gambosis is in, like, these shoes that, like, guys that are, like, barely over 5 feet wear, like, these little athletic platform shoes to make you look taller. And, I mean, that guy's making you come out of your comfort zone and come out of yourself and behave like that? Really? Come on, man. So, G-Funky's distracting me because he's saying some negative stuff about E-40. We'll get into that later. But
I'm not a big E-40 fan either, so I feel you, G-Funky. But
so here's the thing with the next promotion, right? The co-feature in that promotion is not anyone who the quote unquote Gen Z is going to be flocking to see. I don't know about you, Dave, but I don't really think the Gen Z is that crazy about Peter McNeely and Evander Holyfield. There's no YouTube star fighting another YouTuber on this card. It's Holyfield McNeely, Teo Gambosis. It's very interesting to see if that's going to sell like this, because the demographics are like all over the place.
There's
no Jake Paul's promotion.
Well, you know, listen, you had mentioned a little earlier, I forgot who said in the chat room, saying they should be, you know, Eric Gomez and so-and-so should be embarrassed about letting Oscar go on there. Trilla should be embarrassed the way they've been, you know, conducting this whole entertainment so-called value. I mean, they're pretty much telling you they're going to put whatever they want together and they're going to sell it to you. You know, and they're gonna put a nice big bow around a piece of shit, and you're gonna take it and you're gonna eat it. That's where we're at. You know what I don't like though is when people are saying like it's, well, you know, this is boxing. Honestly, that 1.3 million, if that's true, Milcar, how many of those people were boxing fans and how many of them were MMA fans? Because a lot of MMA fans were rooting for that other guy, not Jake Paul.
You're absolutely right, Ben Askren. So, look, you've got the MMA element that's not going to be there for the Teofimo Lopez card, right? You've got the YouTube element that's not going to be there for the Teofimo Lopez card. And then you're bringing in the 50-plus-year-old element, like the fans of Evander Holyfield. Like, with all due respect, Evander Holyfield just is not as popular as Mike Tyson, right? He doesn't have a podcast. He's not, you know, bunning the gun. On YouTube with like celebrities and people that young people can relate to, okay? I don't really know if the recipe is there for success. I mean, I'm happy for Teo and for George to be getting the bag because they're making significant money off of this, and they can actually thank George Gambosis' team for that, which was something he kept harping on that Teofimo didn't really have a response to. It was his team that set up the Triller deal. Something that I've discovered over the past couple of weeks. In fact, his manager is now head of boxing for Triller Fight Night. So that's what it's called, right? Fight Night or
Fight Club? Fight Night, Fight Club.
Yeah. Fight Club. So
that's the first thing you don't do in Fight Club? I wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah. salute, brother. But I hear you. Little Joe. I mean, he was in these like high platform tennis shoes, which makes Teofimo look even more like a cornball for even responding to this dude, taking his shirt off, acting all crazy on stage. To me, it just was a clown show, literally.
It really reminds me, really honestly reminds me, rest in peace, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, rest in peace, DMX, rest in peace, Black Rob, two of my favorite rappers who just passed away recently. But it reminds me when we had Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and he said, listen, in my generation, we didn't need to push. We didn't need to go over the top. We were professionals. We knew our job. We knew that we had to show up and we were going to try to take each other's heads off. That's our job. We're prize fighters. All the other stuff that's being added, it's not needed. It's still considered a gentleman's sport. And it just seems like a lot of people have forgotten that, you know. Going back with Trilla, they really don't understand that, you know, and I've said this before, remember going on your show, talking about, we've had celebrities, we've had rappers try to, you know, dip their toes into promotions, and being the promoter, wearing the promoter hat in the boxing. And they all seem to always think they got a different formula that's going to work, you know, and in reality, if it's not broken, why try to fix it? Which means if you put just good fights, people will come. But I don't think they were trying to go for that, to tell you the truth. I mean, I don't think they really were shooting that route. Because if they were, this would not have been their very first real event.
You mean the Teofimo Lopez card?
No, the Jake Paul card.
Well, it's their second event because their first event was
Mike Tyson. The Mike Tyson. But I honestly thought Mike was more of the push. Like, in my opinion, I thought Mike was and Roy Jones were kind of like more of the promoters, in my opinion. Where this was like Trilla all on their own, where they had to really try to push this byproduct to everybody in their face. Which I got to say, man, they did a great job. Think about it. It ended up on everywhere. ESPN, I mean, everywhere it was on there. So I can't hate on their hustle, but their product obviously didn't deliver. And it's just not me saying it didn't deliver. I mean, if you go on social media, the people that bought into it, they weren't too happy with the product they got. Even the people that were saying they legally streamed it, they were saying they felt like they got gypped.
Well, I don't know how much Tyson Fury would like that, but... yeah, the people who oftentimes stream are like the biggest complainers about the quality of a product. I've always found that very interesting. But look, it was just not a very good quality card. I'm sure it did numbers because of Jake Paul. I'm sure it got a lot of media attention because of Jake Paul and because of the quick ending of the fight. But I don't really think that it was very good. I actually thought the Andrade fight and the car there was much, much better. I enjoyed watching that this afternoon.
I did too.
My only complaint about Boo Boo, I know he got a lot of criticism. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a big fan of the ducking low strategy.
We're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the inside game is something he needs to improve on because there was a lot of holding in that fight. I mean, there was more holding in that fight than there was in the Lennox Lewis Henry Akinwande fight, which was the last time I remember a guy being disqualified for excessive clinching in a heavyweight fight. There was so much clinching in that fight. Anytime Liam Williams tried to go to work on the inside, he got just held up and clinched, you know? And it's often going to be difficult, too, when a guy's defensive strategy is essentially to dip his head low and move forward. You know, it's not the most appealing. My wife was watching it. It was the first time she'd seen him fight. And she's starting to get into boxing because, I mean, it's kind of difficult. I'm watching it almost all the time. And yeah, and she's amazing, and she just reminded me. She definitely is. And but the fact is, she was not entertained by that style.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's not an entertaining style, but it's an effective style. I talked about this last night on the Quick Take. The looking down in the canvas, it's the cardinal rule. You don't take your eyes off your opponent. That's something. I tweeted this out. I said, listen, I think he gives rounds to Canelo. I don't think he beats Canelo, but I think certainly he's going to frustrate Canelo with the holding and the moving and making it a really, really ugly fight. But the thing is with that, looking at the canvas, Canelo's going to catch that. He's a student of the game. Eddie Reynoso and the team are students of the game. They watch tape on who they're going to face. That's why they're able to capitalize on your weakness. And that's something that Andre's going to have to fix on his part. His team and them are going to have to go, okay, let's take away the kinks. Let's iron them out so that if we do get whoever else up next, they're not going to capitalize on that. Now, I don't think he's going to get Canelo. Canelo has a lot of business to take care of at the 168. I'm wondering this, Amilcar. Does Eddie Hearn, I mean, look, the interview after, the post-interview was Eddie Hearn was like, I don't know what's going on with Triple G. PBC, we're willing to go over there if you don't want to come to the zone, blah, 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 blah. I don't think it's a question about that. The risk to me seems to be high. I think that's why none of the middleweights are talking about him. I know in the past they were, but we're here in the present. Do you think it's time for Eddie Hearn to start digging a little bit deeper in his pockets to intrigue other champions and other fighters that want to get in with Boo Boo now?
I think he's stated that he's tried to do that already, David. He's mentioned multiple times in like multiple interviews that Boo Boo's willing essentially to take the exact same purse that Sergey Devrinchenko took to fight Jermall Charlo. And it's pretty difficult to justify him getting a lesser purse than Sergey Dobrynchenko. I mean, if he's willing to take that money, I think that that's fair. But you know what? Jesus in the chat, I got to big him up. Thank you for joining us live. He brought up a great idea. How about Dongora versus Andrade? I mean, they're talking about the 168 IBO title as if it's a major world title. We all know that it is. But I've been very impressed by Dongora in the times that I've seen him. First time I saw him, I believe, was on like a PBC card like years ago.
Right.
And he did a dude part. I forget the brother's name. But I like that guy's style, man.
Yeah, I do too.
He's a southpaw. He's tricky. You know, he's got power. He's aggressive. He can fight on the inside. Jesus, I got to give you all the credit, bro. That's a great matchup. He signed to the zone. He signed to Eddie Hearn. He's at 168. That's a makeable fight, right?
No, it certainly is. Well, I mean, we would think, right?
Yeah, that's obviously if Andrade wants to move up. The problem, too, David, is that Triple G doesn't want any business with anyone that could possibly beat him, which at this point is a lot of top guys, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry if we've got the Triple G fanboys in the chat tonight and watching us live on YouTube, but the Triple G fanboys might not like what I have to say, but I'm just going to say it. The Liam Williams I saw on Saturday would have taken it to him. That would have been a rough and rugged fight.
Really?
What that guy showed me is that he is mentally tough. He's got a will that's very difficult to break. And what Triple G does is he kind of breaks you down mentally throughout a fight. That would be a good fight. I don't think he's going to get it. Triple G wants, like Eddie Hearn said, he wants to wait until New Year's Eve to take on Murata in Japan. I mean, really?
Yeah.
So he can't get Murata because he's obviously looking for Triple G. He can't get Charlo, who's taking on what's the guy's? I can't remember the dude's name right now. But like a number 5 rated challenger, and that's in it within his own sanctioning body. Andrade is not getting the fights, so it's tough. This is the curse of the WBO championship, and I said that on the Leaving in the Ring live a roundtable on Thursday on D-Style Boxing. When you carry that WBO title, regardless of what a lot of people may think, it's not of the same prestige as the WBC, the WBA, and the IBF. What you're doing is you're eliminating yourself from rising in the rankings in the other weight classes. In the other championship sanctioning bodies. Oh, Montiel, thank you very much. I thought it was Montiel.
Yeah, it is Montiel, yeah.
That's what I said the first time. I thought it was him. I'm just second-guessing myself here. Yeah, so he can't go up the rankings of WBC. He can't go up the rankings of the IBF. He can't go up the rankings of the WBA. So he's never going to be in a mandatory shot. He's carrying around the WBO title. And let's face it, a lot of the other champions don't really feel like they need.
Well, I think the only thing I could say about that is,
that's gotta go. That was weird, bro. I'm not quite sure what was going on there.
That's your boy, Boo Boo, man.
Try not to give too much credence to, post-fight interviews. I mean, the guy was just getting his skull banged around for 12 rounds. But, yeah, I can't really explain that one.
Well, you know, look, Liam Williams, obviously, he put a great effort trying to go after and make a fight out of it. You know, my pet peeve is always seeing fighters falling in their punches, a corner not telling them, hey, stop moving forward, wait for his reaction, forget the jab, throw the straight right, throw something else, be creative. that's what the tower coaches are there for, to see the things that the fighter doesn't see. And you know what? I mean, the kid's tough, but I guess I'll just have to disagree about the whole Triple G thing. I think Triple G just boxes circles around him and actually even makes it a much easier looking fight than the way Demetrius Boo-Boo did.
Maybe the Triple G of like 2-3 years ago, but the Triple G I saw last time is an inactive Triple G, and it's a Triple G that gets hit a lot. He's just lucky that the guy he fought last time.
He's not as quick as like Dermanchenko. That's why I thought Dermanchenko was a lot more successful. You know, Dermanchenko doesn't smother himself where he falls into his punches, where he's able to be grabbed and held onto. And here's another thing. I think Triple G's jab still is solid.
Dave, I wasn't talking about Dermanchenko. I was talking about Kamil Azarameta, the Polish fighter who he TKO'd. That dude had limited punching power, but he was touching Triple G up. Triple G did not look very good to me in that fight. I'm talking about the fight that took place last December. I agree with you about Dermanchenko. Dermanchenko's a solid dude.
Right.
I was speaking about Kamil Azarameta, though. But look, I'm not saying it wouldn't be a close fight. I just think that Liam Williams would give him a tough test for sure. I just want to remind everybody, Dave, that lines are open, 718-618-4284, if anyone wants to call in. 718-618-4284. We are live on the Leave It in the Ring radio network and on YouTube.
Okay, well, let me bring on our first guest here, Darren Cunningham, DC3. What's going on, brother? How you doing, man? Can you hear us? I don't know if he can hear us here, but we got him on. Okay, he left, so hopefully he comes back on here with us. But continue, Amilcar, what were you going to say? What was the next thing you were going to say?
No, I was just talking about the middleweight and that I thought Liam Williams did well. He would have done well against Triple G. And that essentially, just to summarize what I was saying, that Boo-Boo's problem is that he's in the WBO. He's got that title. People don't regard it as they regard the other titles. And it's like limited opposition for him right now. It's going to be difficult for him to become a star because people just are not feeling the need to have to fight him.
Absolutely. Let me bring back on Darren DC3 Cunningham. Can you hear us, bro?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, man. How you doing? Hey, thanks for joining us, first off, here on Leaving the Ring, bro.
No, thank you. I appreciate you all for having me.
Yeah, definitely. 13 wins undefeated. You got 7 KOs under your belt. You're from St. Louis, Missouri. 23 years old, super bantamweight. Let me ask you this, you know, because I'm pretty sure everybody's going to come at you in other interviews. They're going to say, oh, who's your favorite fighter? Who got you in and who did all this and that? But let me ask you something a little different. When right now, especially as you know, trying to make a name for yourself, trying to get out there and make other folks notice you, regardless of what you already bring to the table, what are you seeing from other champions right now that have the exposure, that are doing wrong, and you're saying to yourself and your team are saying to you, you know what, we don't want to go that route. We need to go this different route.
To be honest, I don't focus on, you know, other people really. I just stay focused on myself and make sure that I do, you know, the proper necessary things. So when the time comes for me to become world champion, I'll be more than ready.
Great, man. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I knew that I was talking to your PR through text, and I had said, hey, does he have a Twitter? And they were like, no, he doesn't. Hey, don't have Twitter. Don't get on social media, man. Just do all the talking you can with your fists, because that's the best way of actually attracting fans and getting them on your side.
Right.
I see a lot of fighters make this big mistake, which is addicting, you know, being on social media. I shouldn't talk because I'm on social media all the goddamn time. But yeah, stray away from that, man. Try to stay as far as you can from social media.
To be honest, I don't feel that it's anything wrong with social media. I think the big word is balance. You know, it's not what you do, but how you do it.
Absolutely.
A milk carton. If you have a balance with each and everything that you do, then you'll be fine.
Well, Darren, thank you for joining us live here on Leave It in the Ring. People in the chat, if you have questions for Darren, DC3 Cunningham, just drop them in the chat so we can include your questions. What I would like you to do is talk about the scene in St. Louis right now. I mean, obviously, people who know about St. Louis boxing will obviously talk about Kevin Cunningham and all of the fighters he's trained. But what's the scene looking like right now in St. Louis?
You were breaking up really bad. I didn't get a chance to hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I was asking about it, if you know or can speak about the scene in St. Louis right now as it relates to boxing.
Uh-huh.
He was asking about Cunningham, like, you know, what do you think about that scene? Yeah.
It's breaking up really bad. I can't hear you. It's okay. Coming in and out.
He was asking about St. Louis, the boxing scene. I know you're now based out of Las Vegas and stuff, but in St. Louis, how's the scene look? I mean, do you go back? I mean, pretty sure you go back home, right? To go visit?
I go back probably 2 times a year, you know, to just visit my family. But I don't go back too often.
Okay, so what in St. Louis, that's obviously where you started off. What was the scene for you to even get into the sport? Like, what drew you into the sport?
Well, I come from a boxing family, so all my uncles, you know, they were all top amateurs, and 2 of them turned professional. So I always had a boxing pedigree around me, as well as Kevin Cunningham. You know, my grandfather was his second assistant. Corey Spinks, Devin Alexander, you know, all the top guys. So, you know, I feel like it's in my blood.
So was this kind of like, you know, no choice? You were going to end up being a fighter regardless, you know what I mean? Was it one of those deals, or did they give you a choice to do this, you know?
I believe it was all by choice, you know, because you can always start something and stop. But, you know, once I started, I fell in love with it, and the rest was history.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You know, I always often wonder, because boxing is such a lonely sport, how do you keep yourself motivated, bro? Like, what are some of the things what you do to reset yourself, to get yourself back on track, to remember that the accolades are still up ahead, and the goals that you're trying to accomplish, it's going to take time to get there. So what are some of the things to keep you on that road?
To be honest, I feel like you have to be first and foremost self-motivated, you know, and then, you know, I have the likes of Mickey Bay, you know, and world champions in my corner. So I believe in having a strong team to surround yourself, you know, and you can compete at the highest level, you know, for a long period of time.
You know, Mickey Bay used to come on the show. He was a great guy, a good friend of the show. You know, who's surrounding you in Vegas? What are some of the guys out there that you're working with, and what gyms are you working out of?
Well, right now I work out of a private gym, you know, that's in Las Vegas, that I've been working out of for about the past year or so.
Absolutely, bro. Well, you know what, man? I'm really happy that you came on through. I'm excited to see you. I saw your last fight, first off, you know. You show you got explosive, you got speed, you got everything right now that's needed, man. Let me ask you, if you had to grade the way you look now, what is it?
For my performance or just overall?
Overall.
Overall, I give myself a B+, you know, because there's always room for improvement. And I always keep my eyes and ears open to, you know, keep learning. I'm a young student in the game. So, you know, there's nothing but learning and growing to go.
Right. Well, that's the way to go, man. Always stay student to the game and keep adding on to the repertoire. You know, and let me ask you, because I know a lot of kids that are in the sport, just because they're in the sport doesn't mean they love the sport, so they don't watch it.
Right.
Do you watch tape or no?
I watch a little bit here and there, but boxing is more so my lifestyle, you know, so everything pretty much revolves around boxing, you know, in my life.
Well, there you go, man. Darren, DC3, Cunningham, thanks for joining us, bro. Really appreciate it. Can't wait to have you back on the show with us again.
Thank you for me. I thought it would be a little longer. Hopefully next time.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Take care.
It'd be a gift for me to you all. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Thank you. Yeah, you know, we're back over here trying out this, you know, Ecamm, man. We just have to take our interviews back over there to Mokar so that, because, man, it was kind of hard. Yeah, the stream keep crashing on us.
Yeah, to stream, you know, I think that there's just an issue with handling more than two people at the same time on that one, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I might have to cancel the X interview that we have with Henry Ramirez because it was so choppy. And then, like, we couldn't even get the questions that you wanted with Darren, man.
We had questions about his relationship with Devin Haney and whatnot. We should definitely try to get the young man on again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because there was so much other stuff in that. I was just like, I couldn't hear him. It was really choppy.
We got to get him on again, Dave. Yeah. We got to definitely do that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm telling you, that was like, man, there was so much stuff that I had written down that I wanted to talk to him about. But like I said, you know, it was just really, I don't know if everybody in the chat or tuning in was able to hear him. But I just saw pausing and hearing some stuff here and there. Yeah, see, there was a big lag. Big, big lag. So I apologize. We have to get him back on. Definitely have to get him back on. Somebody said, USA, baby, LT, Oscar's voice, yeah.
We needed Oscar tonight.
Yeah, we did, man. Anyways, hey, okay, so before we get going and stuff, I do want to talk about the Showtime schedule. But before we get into that, we got to talk about your boy, Tony Harrison, man. You know, he got the draw. Didn't look that great. I think it's fair to say he's got to tell his brother no more Mr. Trainer on your part, you know. We got to get away from that, and he's got to start looking for a real legit trainer to help him out. And I thought it was really strange here, Milcar, when I heard him and I heard them talking about that they don't do well against southpaws, they don't like sparring southpaws, blah, blah, blah. To me, it was already kind of like setting the mood of what they were going to do and how they were going to perform on Saturday night. I thought it was a bad look. I don't know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, look, you know what I just thought of that it kind of reminds me of? The movie Norbit, the Eddie Murphy movie. Apparently, he was in the running to win an Oscar that year for his performance in Dreamgirls, but he didn't win it, and he ended up winning a Razzie Award, which is given out to, like, the worst actor in the worst movie because of Norbit. I personally didn't think that Norbit was all that bad. I mean, it was just a stupid movie. Yikes. But I mean, he literally did Norbit to help his brother Charlie Murphy, who wrote it and directed it, and it ended up hurting his career.
Absolutely.
It's a situation here with Tony Harrison. I mean, he gave his brother a shot as a trainer, and I think that the product speaks for itself. I mean, the outcome, the advice was not good in the corner.
No,
it was a close fight. After the rounds, he's telling him he's doing great and to just, you know, kind of box and that he doesn't really need to go for it. Meanwhile, Roy Jones, on the other hand, did a great job. I mean, going into the 12th round.
Right.
He's telling Goodfella Perella that he needs to knock the other guy out because that's the kind of urgency you want to give a guy going into the 12th round in a close fight. I'm a huge Tony Harrison fan, but I do not think he won that fight on Saturday. And I think he was very lucky with the draw.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. You know what? I was so skeptical about Roy Jones being a trainer because we've seen him in the past do that. And in the past, it was all about Roy. Here, he was giving instructions. He was watching. He was being attentive to this fighter, telling him what to do. It was surprising that, you know, Harris and them didn't have any adjustments. You know, there was like really no information given to him of how to adjust or to do anything a little bit more. I can't even.
So, David, when literally in the pre-talk about the fight, the week of the fight, he's talking about how he doesn't like southpaws and hasn't really trained against southpaws and hasn't really fought southpaws. I'm like, what?
You know, anytime I hear like somebody, like, you know, going to gym, and you've been to a boxing gym, and, you know, I've been in a boxing gym. A lot of our listeners are avid fans of boxing. They've been in the boxing gym to train, whether or not you're going amateur or pro, but when there's sparring time, and when you already sit, when you already tell yourself in your head, I'm not going to do good, even in like weightlifting or any type of thing, even at work, let's say you're going to work, you're like, I'm just going to have a really shitty day. Guess what happens? You end up having a really shitty day. So when I heard that, I was like, these guys are already setting themselves up for failure. Like, they're already telling you they're going to have a bad performance. It was really weird to hear that, especially if coming from professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're getting some feedback in the chat, guys. Look, we owe it to the young man.
Yeah, we do.
We're gonna bring him on again. That's for sure. Unfortunately, there's some technical issues tonight that we'll definitely sort out and get right. And we will have the young man on for an extended interview sometime soon. Even if we have to do it outside of the Monday show, I would definitely do that just to get him on and get those questions in. Because we did have people calling, asking in the chat about his relationship with Devin Haney, et cetera, and to talk about his work in the weight class and other things. But yeah, back to what you were saying, David. I mean, all of that tells me is that the preparation in the camp was not what it was supposed to be. He is supposed to be a championship level fighter. Like, come on now. You got to be able to not just deal with the southpaw general style, but like multiple styles within the southpaw style. You know, counter punching, boxer puncher, come forward fighter, right hook to the head, right hook to the body, straight left, which side to roll with, which side to retreat from. I mean, there's so many different elements that you would have thought that there would have been preparation for that. It's not us saying this. They said it themselves. Like,
right, yeah. It's, you imagine this in professional, like football or baseball, where they're like, look, man, we had a really shitty camp the whole year. Don't expect much from us.
It's like an NFL team, like the week before, like the AFC or NFC championship, saying, you know what? We don't really know how to stop the run game. Like, we're only good at defending against receivers. It's like, what?
Yeah, Yeah, that was crazy. That was definitely crazy. So, Tony Harris, look, you got to go back to the drawing board. Not to the drawing board, but you got to do is clean house. And I know it's your brother, you know, which is very tough to have in a family member, because anytime you're like, you got to be honest and truthful to a family member, it doesn't end well. But his brother's got to be realistic, right? Mokar's got to be realistic and go back and look at this fight and then realize, you know what, the best thing for my brother, Tony Harrison, who's had a year layoff, who was in a very tough fight, very competitive fight with Charlo, comes back, doesn't look good. It's time for him to lend an ear, to listen to everybody else that's saying, hey, listen, it's time for him to get a real trainer. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you do not learn the trade with a championship fighter. I think the only person I've ever literally seen do that successfully was Ben Davidson, Tyson Fury's trainer.
Yeah.
Which is just rare. I mean, look, people literally call that guy Rain Man. Remember Rain Man, the Dustin Hoffman character?
Yes, sir.
He just has like a very special brain as it relates to boxing. But that's like a very unique situation. Like, you really do need to have an experienced trainer if you want to be competing at the championship level.
Especially when you're in the championship level. You know, you always want to try to have your advantages. You know, that's why you see champions go seeking for a strength conditioning coach, going to the best facilities, looking for the best sparring partners, looking for the right places to do road work. You're always looking to be on top of your game because you're going to need it when you start facing stiffer and harder competition. This is where I'm not going to put solely all the blame on Tony Harrison's brother, because some of that he's got to be accountable for, which is he's got to be honest with himself. Does he want to be in those championship fights? Does he want to be a factor? I mean, he was there. You beat Charlo once, but do you want to get back there? You know, the criticism from Andy Ruiz is he's never been disciplined. He's never took it serious. But now you can see he's on the right track. Tony Harrison needs to get on that right track as well.
He does. If he wants to get another shot, because Ryan Castano would have beaten him Saturday night. But Jermell Charlo would have knocked him out Saturday night. And he's got to get a new trainer. I mean, bring your brother in as an assistant trainer. Give him a shot. Let him learn the trade under an experienced guy. You know, I mean, his dad was a very good trainer. His dad was one of the father trainers in the sport. At RIP to him, he's got to get another experienced guy like that. He just does.
He really does, you know, and how much of that honestly could came into play for him, not hearing a familiar voice in that corner. So are we too quick to judge and criticize this performance? Or is this just really a sign of like when Danny Jacobs, who lost his grandmother, went in there and lost? Tony Harrison didn't lose in that fashion, got a draw, but like you said, got a kind of a gift there. And you're not the only one I'm hearing that from, you know, but at the same time, I wonder how much of the loss of his father really honestly put that major effect where didn't get to have that familiar voice to give him those right suggestions of what he needed to do on Saturday.
Yeah. He just needed someone who was going to tell him the truth. And I don't know, David, you have brothers, I believe. I don't have brothers. I have two younger sisters, so I don't have anybody in my, you know, immediate family that takes on those kind of roles with me. I mean, I have cousins who have done that, but you know, if you're a male and you got a brother and your brother's the trainer, he better be an older brother that gives you the real deal, not a younger brother that just tells you that you're doing great.
You know, sometimes even older brothers can't fill those shoes of a father figure, you know. Me having an older brother, a lot of folks used to think I was the older brother, you know, but I mean, it just comes down to me. It stems down to the fact that, you know, sometimes having family in a family business is very difficult because it holds you back from saying what's the actual reality of what's going on, you know? So I think that what he needs to do is go back, assess the situation, look at that performance, study that performance of Mokar, and then go, hey, this is what I need to do in order to take that next level step where I once was at the time. What got me there in the first place? That's what I need to go back. I need to, you know, trace those steps back of what got me there the first time. And, you know, that could be the reason he didn't look that successful.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, David. You're absolutely right. And he's going to have to get it right because he just took a draw against a guy who was essentially a German contender at 154 pounds.
Absolutely, man. Now, let's go down with that Showtime schedule. Let me ask you, out of all the fights there that have been posted by them and that's on that schedule for the remainder of this whole year, to rain out of this whole year, which one's the one that really stands out for you and gets you really excited?
Man, I mean, for me, you know I'm a Rigo fan, bro. So it's definitely the Rigo fight. I'll tell you that it's definitely not Gervonta Davis, Mario Barrios. That's for sure.
Really, you don't like that fight, huh?
Bro, John Rio Casimiro against Guillermo Rigondo,
That's a good fight. That is a good fight.
That's the one I'm looking forward to. And obviously, I'm also looking forward to Jermell Charlo, Brian Castaño, too, which that will be pretty young. So those are by far my two leading fights.
Okay, those two leading fights, which one, though, to you is more competitive? Which one do you think is going to be more competitive? Castano or the Charlo one? I don't think that, honestly, I'm going to say right now, I don't think that's going to be that highly competitive.
I mean, you would think that just because Jermell Charlo's kind of been
very athletic. Very athletic.
But there, oh, I forgot to mention my third favorite fight, which is the Ubali Donaire fight.
Donaire, yes. Yes. Muay
title. That's my third fight. But, bro, I'll tell you this. This is the best people in boxing right now. And I thought Showtime was dead. That's the funny thing.
Really?
Like the last, bro, when HBO went, I thought Showtime was next. I'm like, right. These streaming platforms, this ESPN deal, it's over for them. Like PBC, Matchroom, and Top Rank are just going to body PBC on Fox are just going to body Showtime. But now all of a sudden, you know what's happened? Fox ain't going to be continuing with boxing, bro. So the PBC is having to go back to the Showtime well. And now Showtime's where it's at again.
They always do, though. They've always kind of shown that sign. You know what they try to do is get – here's the thing with PBC is they got so many fighters. They got to fill up these dates. They got to satisfy their roster of their guys and stuff. But, you know, I wanted to point something out. Those three fights right now that you just mentioned, which are great, phenomenal fights. I like those that lineup right now that Showtime is showing us, okay? But think about this. Two guys are supposed to be on their way out. Two guys are not even supposed to be mentioned at this moment in 2021. Nonito Donaire and Rigondeaux. Guess what? They're still holding water and weight here of being very intriguing and taking on very intriguing fights. Well, you got the younger generation like Crawford and Spence that are not really doing much. Kind of weird.
You're absolutely right. And it's the generation just below the Rigondeaux Donaire generation, because those guys are in their 30s as well, dog. Right. You know, but yeah, I mean, I would love Rigondeaux to win this fight. Although I'm a fan of Casimiro too. So, I mean,
right.
Be disappointed for Rigo, but not necessarily for the sport of boxing. But the winner of this fight against the monster Inoue, sign me up.
Boy.
Sign me up. I want to see that.
Yeah, I definitely want to see that, you know. And you know what? It is a tall order for both guys, Rigondeaux and Casimiro, for them to accomplish. Both guys are going to have a lot to study and remember and perform when they do step in. Even like Nonito, you know, Nonito to me was on my list of great comebacks in boxing, because after being labeled as the pound for pound guy, everybody remembering him and put him on the same, you know, pedestal of Pacquiao and Floyd and saying that he was this and that, he kind of fell off as a fighter. Remember that? He became like a photographer, being a media guy, and just would really have, was kind of living that celebrity life. He returned into the fighter mode, the guy that I truly fell in love with the first time, the guy that knocked out Vic Darchinian. You know, that's to me where he's kind of returned. It's, you know, some would say a little too late, but you know what? I thought that in the beginning when he got into the tournament, but he's proved me wrong every single time, especially when he got in with the monster.
Yeah, absolutely. And he showed who he is in that fight. I mean, you could speak to him much more than I can, Dave, because you're from the Bay. He's from the Bay. I'm sure your knowledge of in that scene out there, you can speak to him for days, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's from San Leandro. I mean, I interviewed him many, many times. I met him and his wife. You know, I mean, look, after Victor Chilean dismantled his brother, I don't think anybody was not rooting for Nonito Donaire that night, man. You know, the cockiness that Vic Darchinian, I remember having Vic Darchinian, and he was just like, everything that came out of Vic's mouth was, I would break him, I would beat him, I would knock him out. There was not, you can ask him like, hey, do you want a bottle of water? I'd break it, I'd knock him out, you know? That level of cockiness was something else, you know? And I'm talking to Nonito, he was just like, listen, I'm going to go out there. I got a game plan. I'm going to stick to it. And he stuck with it, you know. Really good dude to talk to. But definitely, I thought he fell off the ladder when he got into that, you know, which it happens. Media can get into a fighter's head. They can make you believe that you can move mountains, that you're a god. When in reality, the reason why fans fell in love with you is because of your performance in the ring. And I thought that he lacked that. He just forgot about doing any of that stuff, you know?
There you go. There you go. So that those are my thoughts on the Showtime schedule, Dave. A great schedule. Right now it's leading the way. We'll see if he and Matchroom the Zone can catch up. But that PBC Showtime schedule is looking solid, man. And I'm happy I'm subscribed to Showtime right now.
Absolutely. Let's just hope that nothing gets in the way and nothing gets postponed because, you know, unfortunately, when we see these type of schedules, we get all amped up. There's always one or two of them that's going to kill the mood. Let me ask you this. What fight out of that whole roster of fights, those three fights right now, which one would kill the mood for you where you're like, damn, man?
I mean, look, I think everyone who's here live with us right now is just like me in the sense that we're going to be watching every single one of these fights. The first one being Luis Neri, Brandon Figueroa. I'm going to be watching that. I'm going to be watching Danny Roman and Ricardo Espinoza Franco. I'm looking down the list here. And I mean, the biggest disappointment for me on this entire thing is the Tank Davis fight. And,
I'm not too disappointed in that, to tell you the truth.
Here's why I'm disappointed, bro. I'm disappointed because it's going to be on pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean,
if it was on regular Showtime, I'd be cool with it. Like, but the problem is it's a pay-per-view fight, and I just don't see it as a pay-per-view fight. And I'm going to buy it, so that's why I'm just not too happy about it.
So then I would say that it's not, I mean, you're saying it's not the fight itself. It's a good fight. I think it's a good fight. Excuse me. But it's not pay-per-view quality type of fight.
No, it's not, because the fights I've mentioned are better fights and they're on free Showtime.
Right. So what sets the bar in your opinion? Let me ask you, what sets the bar for a pay-per-view fight? What's the model that we need to go back to for a pay-per-view fight? Because to me, I think it's very difficult to actually create a super fight. You know, there's only probably two fights off the top of my head that I considered super fights that should be on pay-per-view that I think anybody would be glad to dish out their hard-earned money.
I mean, look at it this way, Dave, right? Jermell Charlo, Brian Castaño is going to be a good fight. It's going to be exciting. It's for Undisputed. And that's not a pay-per-view fight. Mm-hmm. Whereas a guy with a secondary title going up in weight to fight another guy with a secondary title is on pay-per-view. I mean, that's just not a pay-per-view fight. So look, what are the pay-per-view fights right now? They're few and far between, and that's how it should be. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua is a pay-per-view fight. It is. That's a pay-per-view fight. Mm-hmm. Anything involving Canelo against another champion like Saunders, that's a pay-per-view fight. He's a superstar unifying against another champion. Once you get off of that, I mean, the fights that are announced that have been out there, there's no other pay-per-view quality fights as far as
I don't think that's what I'm saying. What is the criteria for a pay-per-view? I don't think Canelo and Saunders is a pay-per-view fight. I think if he gets past him, then if the last guy standing, then I would say that's what I mean. Like everybody's criteria of pay-per-view is kind of different.
You know, I say it's a pay-per-view fight. To me, it's a pay-per-view fight because I would not feel that bad about forking over money to watch it. Cause I think it's a really good fight and Canelo's a superstar. Would I feel bad about forking over money to see Tank Davis, Mario Barrios? Absolutely. I'll give you an example.
I'd feel bad on both of them, to tell you the truth. I had, paying for them.
Right. I am going to buy Andy Ruiz, Chris Areola. Because I watch everything. Right. I'm not going to feel very good about buying that pay-per-view. And I've said it in the past that I won't buy it. Maybe I won't. But the truth is, I'm not excited about buying that. I don't feel good about buying that. I would not feel that way about buying Canelo against Billy Joe Saunders. A much more digestible purchase for me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, the money bag that everybody's talking about with the Trilla thing is that, you know, boxing promoters have been doing this for years, you know, and that's what I mean. I think we fell off with the criteria of what should be a pay-per-view, because back in the 80s, leading into the 90s, it was super fights. It was the Super Bowl for boxing fans. Now everything's kind of like watered down, you know. You had a great segment, which I truly loved, and it's on the, it's on your channel on the live at 5, and it's on the Solarplex Zone as one of the segments is talking about the UFC model. You know, they everything is pay-per-view for them. Everything, you know. It's the watered-down model. And boxing is trying so hard to water down all these events, you know, where that's where somebody right now Outlaw put, you know, Steven Espinosa doesn't get enough credit for keeping fights on Showtime and going. And you know what? Steven Espinosa has truly shown that he's a boxing fan and he wants to watch some really good fights. Now, does he have control all the time of what's going to be put together, what's being delivered to him? Absolutely not. That's not the network's job. It's the promoter to sell them a fight so they could put it on a time slot, you know. But going back with the pay-per-view, I agree with you. You know, it's really hard to dish out your hard-earned money. But again, it goes back to that anybody, not just boxing fans, we all have forgotten what is the criteria to a pay-per-view event. You know, and we have now seen the low bar of what a pay-per-view event is, what's just happened on Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And that like I said, look, Teo Kambosos Jr. is in the pay-per-view. That is an HBO Showtime style fight, championship boxing. It's just not a pay-per-view. It's like, to me, at the same level of like a Kostya Zou Zab Judah fight, which was on Showtime, right? Or Kostya Zou Ricky Haddon fight, which was on Showtime. It's just not a pay-per-view. Again, right now, literally the only two fights I can justify being on pay-per-view are Canelo Saunders and Fury Joshua. That's it. There's nothing else.
Absolutely. Well, we had another interview scheduled. I got to let Henry Ramirez let him know. I don't want to bring him on, and it's really choppy, and it just looks really crappy here. I think we're at the tail end of our show. We just have to reschedule that one and see if we can get that young man, Darren Cunningham, the third back here on A Leaving the Ring. We're going to have to do it on the StreamYard, right? That's what you got there,
yeah.
Amokar.
Yeah.
And again, everybody, thanks for joining us here on Leaving the Ring. Any final thoughts there, Amokar, for yourself here before we get going?
No, just happy to be back on Leaving in the Ring with you, David. And I'm looking forward to getting Cunningham back on. We owe it to the young man. Looking forward to speaking to Henry Ramirez. I was hoping to hear his perspective on the Ruiz-Areola fight. I'm sure he'd have some good insights on that, obviously. And also just to hear about what he's doing right now in the game of boxing. I know he's working with some fighters, and we'll be able to talk to him about that next time we catch him on Leaving in the Ring.
Absolutely, man. He even texted me, and I was like, hey, are we doing this? I got to let him know we're not going to do this. I mean, even right now, I just moved, and it got all choppy here, which is crazy because I got my internet changed. Everything got changed. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is here on Leaving the Ring. Again, guys, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, give us the schedule, Milcar, for the podcast rotation.
Okay, so Nando's asking about a couple of things. I'll tackle those on the Leaving in the Ring Live at 5 Boxing show, which I do Tuesdays and or Thursdays. Sometimes they're slow weeks, so I try to get my man Kenny on with me as much as possible, and some people I have out there in the UK. That's 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific time. Tonight on the Leaving in the Ring network, you can check out The Shoe Shine, which goes live on YouTube. Their podcast will be up later in the week. Tuesdays, we've got none other than D-Style Boxing, Hispanics Causing Panic. That goes up the following day on Leaving in the Ring radio network. Wednesday, we've got Hispanics Causing Panic Uncensored, hosted by my main man, G-Funky, G-Funky Boxing. Thursday is the Leave It in the Ring roundtable, and that goes out live 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's on D-Style Boxing. And that's pretty much our whole rotation. Dave puts together the Solar Plex Zone, which is like a compilation of all of the different shows. That goes out on Sundays on the Leave It in the Ring channel. So that's the family right there. That's what we do on a week-to-week basis. I will tackle that for you, Nando, on my show on Tuesday.
Along I actually with some wanted other to give my quick prediction about that, man. I don't know what you're thinking about that. Navarrete, Emmanuel Navarrete versus Christopher Diaz. Can I get your quick pick on that one?
Oh, I'm going Navarrete all the way, bro.
All the way? 100%? Yeah, 1,000?
Let's you know, I got to give it to my Native American brother from south of the border, bro. Like, Navarrete, the truth. Like, Liam Williams is described as the machine. He's the Mexican machine. Liam Williams might be the Welsh machine. Navarrete is the Mexican machine. And the funny thing is, he's got a lot of boxing skill. He just doesn't always have to use it because what he's good at gets guys out of there, man. And that's that kind of come forward, rough and rugged style. A lot of people can't deal with it, just like they can't deal with Martinez, man, at 112 pounds. It's a very similar story. I love the guy's style, and I expect them to come out successful in this fight. You know, I do see him being taken some rounds. I definitely see that.
I think Chris is going to be a puzzle to solve, to tell you the truth, you know.
Chris is going to show him some looks.
Yeah, he's been in there with some really tough oppositions. I mean, he lost to Shakur Stevenson, which is a completely different style. I agree with you. Navarrete is just a world, is a win world, you know, swirl. I mean, the guy just comes forward, throws punches from different angles. He doesn't give you time to think and time to breathe. It's going to be up to Chris to really kind of set the mood and the pace, which I don't know if he could do that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Navarrete is a strong, strong kid.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of reminds me of I was about to say, but I don't want to discredit my man Vernon Forrest. That's the thing, because Vernon Forrest was high level, but that kind of a fight for like Mayorga against Forrest, where I just see him getting overwhelmed the way Forrest was when he fought Mayorga. Although I do think that Forrest was a better fighter, obviously, than
Christopher Diaz,
sorry. And I think that Navarrete's got some skills in there too. But like, that's the kind of clash of styles that I see in this fight.
You know, Puerto Rico versus Mexico has got a very in-depth history between each other to always make up for great fights. You know, the thing is that though we haven't seen Navarrete be pushed back, we don't know if he fights off the back foot. We don't know how well he does with guys that are going to give him complete angles. We don't know if you stick a good jab in his face, if he could slip those jab and land these big punches. There are still some questions. There are things there that Christopher could possibly do in that fight. But to me, it all adds up with condition and the right game plan. And not just having one game plan against a guy that's going to be all over you, you know. And
his conditioning, Dave, is exactly it. The guy's in tremendous shape. I remember I saw a documentary many years ago on the Native American running culture in that part of Mexico, and how they do like these long ass endurance runs, like crazy runs, like two, three marathon level runs, like without stopping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's Navarrete. Isaac Dogbe tried to ask all of these questions of Navarrete.
But he's not Christopher Diaz, though. I mean, he doesn't have the skill level, doesn't have the IQ of Christopher Diaz, you know? Christopher Diaz, to me, is honestly, Navarrete, this is going to be a new type of face. He's skill-wise, he's facing. I think that Chris possibly could show that Navarrete may not be the monster that we're all praising him to be. He may show that there's a possibility of taming him. This is a really great fight, man, in my opinion. But for both guys to go at this right now at this level of the career, I think it's a phenomenal move.
I'm looking for that. And I got something for my man G-Funky real quick. You ready for it, David?
Go ahead.
Nice. Smart. He check up under my car for tracking device. Sharp. Be cool. Think twice. Think twice. If the chariots, you're behind you with the lights. With the lights.
Ooh, that's my man, Efeezy. What does G-Funky know about Efeezy, man? E-Fonzarelli, man. E-40, 41. Come on, man. Come on, come on. You're from the Bay Area, Dave.
Oh, I know. And actually, I've met E-40 a lot of times. I actually knew his cousin pretty well that was at a studio in Fresno, California. But you know what? I mean, I'm not saying I'm not a fan, but I like some of his music, but I'll be straight up. I've never been a West Coast lover. Like, you know, I can listen to NWA, Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, but to be all honest, I was a DMX, Black Rob, Poor Righteous Teachers.
About the East Coast.
Yeah, I was the East Coast head, and everybody used to think that was crazy. Like, what? Like, you like all that crap? And I did. I was a lyricist. I loved lyricists. Not saying that E-40 and them weren't. I would still bump their music, but it wasn't my to go. List of songs that I would tune in, but hey, whatever.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, let's get back at it again, bro. Let's get Cunningham back. Let's get Henry Ramirez back, and let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Okay, folks. Hope everybody enjoyed this segment here of Leaving the Ring. Too bad we couldn't get these interviews going, but we'll get back on track. We'll get the StreamYard up over here. And, yeah. All right, man. You guys have a good night. Don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Thomas y Caballeros.